This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Aya Quinta is out. James Vick is in as the new opponent for Justin Gaethje in Lincoln, Nebraska. Could Brad Katona be the first Canadian Ultimate Fighter on a non-Canadian branded season of the show? Retirements galore. We've got Rashad Evans, Johnny Hendricks, Greg Rebello, and Felipe Aranches all stepping away from MMA in a three-day span. Bellator announces a deal with DAZN. UFC 226's Rob Font joins the show to discuss his upcoming fight against Rafael Assuncao. And a special guest co-host, James Lynch, is with me to preview not one but two UFC events coming up. Thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa. Or to the podcast, please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. James, great to have you here.
Hey, good to be here, Aaron. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. My pleasure. You know, it's always great speaking with you. Always great talking shop. We got a lot to discuss this particular week. So let's get started with Paul Felder. He's left without an opponent once again. James Vick steps in for Ally Aquinta. It's kind of the circle of Paul Felder. It all stems from Ally Aquinta. So Ally Aquinta's opponent at UFC 223. The Conor incident happens. Aya Quinta ends up getting the fight because the commission won't let Felder fight because he's not ranked. Don't get me started on that tangent, but we'll just leave that as it is. So he gets the fight. The only other lightweight without an opponent is his teammate, Anthony Pettis. They're not going to fight, so that fight gets scrapped. Felder left without an opponent there, gets rebooked against James Vick in Boise, Idaho. That fight's just over 2 weeks away from now. Suddenly, Ally Aquinta, again, the circle of Ally Aquinta, he steps out for undisclosed reasons against Justin Gaethje. Tickets on sale for Lincoln, Nebraska tomorrow, I think. So they need to scramble and get something together. It's either tomorrow or today. So they have to scramble and get together a main event. They pull James Vick from the fight with Felder in a couple weeks. He's now facing Justin Gaethje, and Paul Felder once again left without an opponent.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Paul Felder once again left in the dust here, and I understand the fact that, you know, a key thing that you said there is that the tickets go on sale soon. So, you know, if we're thinking about why is Aya Quinta pulling out, I'm sure that's related to, you know, the ticket sales and potentially his purse in this fight. And you know, it's just it's unfortunate for Felder, who works for the UFC not just as a fighter but as a commentator as well too, doing stuff for Contender Series. He's done some UFC broadcasts as well. You'd think they would have figured this out, but I really feel like Al went out there and you know, pulled a fast one with this. I think he tried to play hardball with the UFC as far as his contract and everything, or for the purse in this fight, and it didn't play out in his favor. And I think that's why Felder does not have an opponent right now, and they're currently scrambling to find one, because I can't see the UFC doing this again to Felder with what happened last time at 223.
You know, I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I remember Dana White before UFC 223 said something along the lines of, you know, we're gonna like, it was right around the time they cut Yair Rodriguez. He was like, we're gonna cut someone else. He alluded to it, and it never happened.
Yeah,
I have a feeling that has something to do with Ally Aquinta.
Oh, it has. Yeah,
and I just worry about his future. Like, I don't know, unless it's a legit injury, of course, and then we're just, you know, I'm just speculating, but I have a feeling that he's going to be on the outs with the UFC if this kind of thing keeps happening.
I agree, and I tend to believe that it's not an injury. It's an actual financial reason, and the reason I say that, if you look at some of the tweets from last night that Al had, he basically said that they withdrew from the fight. So what does that tell you? I mean, it's not like Al is you know, claiming to have an injury. If he had an injury, I'm sure we'd know about it by now, but it's just, you know, it's unfortunate because you know, I feel for Paul in this situation. Vick versus Gaethje is a phenomenal fight, but you got to feel for Felder here, who, again, is you know, just scrambling just to get a good fight.
I'm sure they'll get him a replacement, but if you look at the rankings, there's not really a whole lot of options for him. Most of the guys in the top 15, if not all of them, are tied to something.
Exactly. I think the name that really stands out is a guy that's already put his name in the hat is David Tamer. You know, he's been undefeated since he's been in the UFC, and he's, you know, not maybe the type of ranked opponent that a Felder would like, but he's a guy that is on a bit of a winning streak. You know, he handed Dracar Close his first loss of his career. He beat Lando Venata, so he has some legit wins here. I don't think that's necessarily the worst matchup, but again, if you're Felder, you go from James Vick to, you know, potentially David Tamer. That is a bit of a step down.
Two guys that are fighting each other at 226, Close and Venata.
But exactly.
With Tamer, I remember seeing that he had thrown his name in the hat against Gaethje. Did he also say he's willing to fight Felder on short notice?
I believe that, yeah. That, from what I was reading, that was the case as far as him potentially fighting Paul Felder. Yeah, I could be wrong, because I know there's a bunch of tweets going on last night. But Tamer seems like a legitimate replacement for, you know, Vick against Felder.
And that's a worthy co-main event. That's
it
a
is.
Good fight.
Yeah, it is. And they're both, and you know, it's a good matchup in terms of there's two lightweights who, you know, have kind of been underrated in the division, and this is their chance to sort of, you know, leapfrog a little bit ahead of the rankings.
And Gaethje versus Vick is a fun fight. I don't really know how to what to think about that fight, because there's so many different ways that could play out. I think Gaethje is going to be a tough matchup for Vick. I think that
I agree.
In terms of just an X's and O's on paper matchup, I think Gaethje could put it on Vick. If Vick doesn't know how to deal with the aggression, because he hasn't really fought guys like that. People tend to keep their distance from James Vick because he's so dangerous with really an array of weapons. Namely, his head kick is very devastating. He's good at utilizing his reach, but Gaethje doesn't seem to care about that kind of stuff.
No, and if you look at Vick's one loss in the UFC, official loss, I mean, we don't have to talk about the Ultimate Fighter where he lost to Michael Chiesa, but the one loss he had was against Dariush, and that was a fight where Dariush came out aggressive and he was able to finish him, and it was a quick finish. So if I'm Justin Gaethje, I'm looking at that fight as a catalyst to potentially beat a James Vick. But one of the things we haven't even talked about, Aaron, these guys do not like each other, and it stems not just from the fighters themselves, but Ali Abdelaziz on the MMA Hour, he made a comment about James Vick, saying that he wanted a headline. So it sort of goes beyond that. And I interviewed Vick last week, actually, talking about the Felder fight, and Gaethje's name came up. So it's one of those interesting things that, from what I gather, Vick does not respect Gaethje. He feels that, he was fighting subpar competition in World Series of Fighting. Leave that what you will, but that's how he feels. And I'm sure Gaethje as well, just with some of the comments here and there, I think there's going to be a lot of personal stuff going into this fight, and it's going to be a great fight.
If you recall, Gaethje was calling out Vick as well in the lead-up to the Poirier fight.
That's true.
Even though he was fighting Poirier that week, he took the time to say, James Vick, this guy just doesn't stop complaining.
Yeah.
So it's good. You can build something from there and make it into a good sellable fight. I mean, Vick versus Gaethje versus Iaquinta and Gaethje versus James Vick is kind of a wash for me. I think Iaquinta probably has more name value because he just fought for a title technically. I mean, he wouldn't have won the title had he won, but so he might just have more of a household name. But at the same time, I think Vick versus Gaethje is as competitive as a fight as Iaquinta and Gaethje.
No, I agree with that. And for James Vick, I mean, if you want to take a positive out of this thing, aside from the matchup itself, which on paper looks awesome, but Vick's wanted a top opponent for a while and he hasn't got one, and now he finally gets one. And I know he's had some contract issues with the UFC, so to see him get a marquee fight like this, a main event, good for him. He's put in the work, and he's got a great record in the UFC, and I think he's 10-1 overall.
Yeah, it's put up or shut up. I mean, for James Vick, he keeps calling out for better opponents. He says everybody's ducking him. Well, you've got your guy.
Yeah.
And Justin Gaethje's not exactly the guy you want to step in with. Although I think that if you look at Gaethje's last two fights, there's a recipe there. If you can outlast him for a couple rounds and hang with him, eventually he just has to slow down. It's just the nature of really human chemistry.
Yeah. No, I agree. And the other thing is, has Gaethje fought an opponent like Vick, who's got a really kind of interesting build for the division? He's a really lanky guy. Interesting thing I found out actually last week with Vick. He doesn't lift weights. So he wants to focus more on speed and everything else. He says he hasn't lifted weights since high school, so it's working for him, obviously, because he's done quite well. But as far as the actual Gaethje's build against Vick's build, it should be an interesting matchup.
And also, Vick is he has more of a boxing background. He's got more of a technical striking background. So how that plays against Gaethje, who can really take you out of your game and try turn things into a brawl, is Vick gonna approach the fight with an X's and O's mentality, or is he just going to have confidence in himself that he's going to be able to outstrike Gaethje? I guess time will tell the story, but that's an interesting matchup. I really like that matchup.
Yeah, and one more thing on Vick. First-time father. He just had a son, I believe, a couple weeks ago. So, fatherhood going into this fight, how will that change his mentality going into this? We'll see. But
Different fighters react differently.
Exactly.
So a bunch of retirements. Rashad Evans on the Ariel Helwani MMA show, I guess it's called.
Yeah, that's what it's called, yeah.
He announces his retirement. Johnny Hendricks on MMA Junkie Radio announces his retirement. Felipe Aranches announces his retirement. Greg Rebello, after his loss at the Contender Series, announces his retirement. So it's a week of retirements. But in terms of Rashad Evans, I think it's tough to see him go out this way because he was such a legend in the sport, one of the best light heavyweights ever. I mean, when you seize that title and you defend that title, I think he had did he have a defense or two?
No, he didn't have a single one
because he lost to Machida.
I was going to say, he beat Griffin and then he lost to Machida.
I can't remember if there was a fight.
And the famous Joe Rogan, the Machida era has begun right after that win. So.
And Rashad would go on to fight for the title against Jones down the line, but that's as close as he got to a title again. But he's beaten some of the best guys.
Oh, yes. And you even look at where he started on The Ultimate Fighter, winning it as a heavyweight and then moving down and just the success that he's had winning a UFC title. I know he didn't defend it, but I would hope that people remember Rashad as a Hall of Famer. He really has some signature wins. He was really big for the UFC in the early going as far as, some star power. And, I think he translated well as a coach on The Ultimate Fighter, and there's a lot of good that he's done in the sport. The problem with the sport is you have fans who sort of get on a little bit later, and they look at Rashad now, and they see all the losses, and they think, this guy, he wasn't very good. But those of us who have watched it from the early going, Rashad is absolutely a legend, and, it's unfortunate to see him go out this way, but this is often a tale told with a lot of fighters, unfortunately.
Yeah, same could go for Hendricks. And these are two high-level NCAA wrestlers as well. And we haven't seen a whole lot of them come up in the UFC lately. A lot of them have gone to Bellator. If you look at Ed Ruth, who's actually fighting this week, Tyrell Fortune fighting this week.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys have good NCAA pedigrees, but it seems like they're getting in early with those guys, whereas the UFC hasn't been signing a ton of them. I mean, you look at a guy like Gregor Gillespie, he's got a very good pedigree. I'm sure there are some guys I'm forgetting that have got a good NCAA pedigree, but not to the extent of these guys where they're all Americans or even national champions. Felipe Aranches, I mean, he kind of fell off a cliff. I mean, you know, when he first started in the UFC, he was a tough out, but you saw what happened over in Singapore. He was pretty easy pickings for, was it Kanon? Or it was Song Yadong or Song Kanon. Yeah. I'm going to just get the two of them confused.
No,
it was Yadong, right?
Yeah, yes, and I think the main thing is that, I think as a fighter, it's good to recognize where you sort of top out at, and I think he felt after that loss, there's no really, it would be so difficult to get back to where he was, so I think for him to retire, any fighter who retires in their 30s when they realize they're not going to make a run for the title, I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah, same, and Rebello's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
He had two shots at the UFC, lost both times, and probably said, you know what, like, I've had a fun career. It's been a good ride, but if I can't get to that level, probably not for me anymore.
No, Ravello's 35, a great personality.
36, just from 36, 36. Actually, like a week ago.
That's actually true. Yeah. He has a great future in coaching. I know a lot of the guys that train under him really respect him, and I think broadcasting as well. He's done a little bit of commentary, but he has the respect of so many people. I don't know if you saw the tweet. Pat Miletich left him, but just Greg's going to have a great career outside of this, and it's unfortunate he didn't make the leap, but he was close. He won a CES heavyweight title. He had the shot last year on Contender Series and this year as well. Third opponent, by the way, for Ravello in this fight. He had to fight a really tough guy from Michigan, so he ended up getting caught, but that's the fight game.
Absolutely. And you mentioned to me beforehand that Rob Font is a good friend of Rebello, so we can ask him about that when he's on the show a little bit later on. Brad Gatona has a chance of becoming the first Canadian Ultimate Fighter winner. I mentioned it in our morning meeting today, and I said, I think he would be. I think he would be the first Canadian Ultimate Fighter winner in like a regular season, not like we've
Tough
seen
Nations.
The Tough Nations show. But he has looked fantastic on the show. And in my eyes, I respect Tyler Diamond a lot if Tyler Diamond does get the win next week over Jay Cuccinello. But I think Katona's beaten the two best guys already on the show. Like, I really think that the it was Kyler Phillips, who he beat first. And I think Kyler Phillips, to me, was one of the top guys. And then you look at his previous win against Bryce Mitchell, and I thought Bryce Mitchell was the guy to beat in that division. And again, no disrespect to Tyler Diamond, because I think he's a hell of a prospect too, and I think that he was the first pick.
Yeah.
But Katona's looked good in both those fights.
What's more amazing about this is that Brad primarily fights a bantamweight.
Yeah, he's fighting upper class.
So the fact that he's gone in there at featherweight, Robin Black and I talk about this all the time. Brad Katona was a guy that was on our radar years ago, and just to see the growth he's had and the way he's adapted and just professional, not just in the cage, but outside the cage as well, too. He represents the sport really well. I think this has been one of the best stories this season, not only just for, the show in general, but for Canada. Just, we just saw Jeremy Kennedy leave the UFC. We need more prospects getting in there, and Brad has certainly made a case for himself. I like the way he kind of has done the Clark Kent sort of persona on the show, but it's been great. And regardless of what happens at the finale, Brad has, I think, exceeded expectations, because if you look at some of the guys on that roster, like you mentioned, Kyler Phillips, Bryce Mitchell, I don't think Brad would have been favored in those fights.
Oh, absolutely not. I thought that those guys were, again, the two best guys and the guys to beat in that division, and he beat both of them. I mean, the Bryce Mitchell fight was tough for him. I think he was on his way to losing a decision there, and he was able to pull a rabbit out of his hat in the third round, but it was still a competitive fight.
And what's interesting about this, Aaron, this might have not even been possible if Brad had just stayed at home training with Curtis Brigham at his gym in Winnipeg. The fact that he went to SPG Island, I think, helped that notoriety. Even on when they did the release of when they announced where Brad was from, they said Ireland, but Brad is, of course, from Winnipeg. So I don't know, had he not trained there, I don't know if they would have, said, oh, SPG guy, if they would have brought him in. So this whole story of him, making it to the finals has just been remarkable, and I'm excited to watch him fight live.
Yeah, for sure. And I keep saying Tyler Diamond. We don't know if Tyler Diamond's going to be in the final, but
Tyler has been the favorite the whole season. He trains at Team Alpha Male. I mean, he was a guy that a name that I had heard for years as far as a guy who should have been signed to the UFC. So the fact that he's making it he's at the semifinals. Oh, let's just put it this way: if he loses, I'd be really surprised.
Really? You think he's that much higher level than Katona?
Well, so for his semifinal fight, the finale fight.
Oh, for the semifinal fight. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Just to clarify, but I think that.
If it was
him and Katona, I mean, that is a coin flip, to be honest, because Brad really has looked like that last fight with Mitchell really impressed me.
Yeah, same with me. I thought Mitchell reminds me of like a mini Demian Maia. Like he's just always looking for submissions. He's dangerous off his back. He's got a lot going for him. He, I think, has the brightest future, even with the loss of anybody on this show. I really have high hopes for him. And I mean, also Joe Giannetti has looked fantastic on the show.
And you know what's great, Aaron? A lot of those guys you just mentioned, they're all really young. I mean, Giannetti's
like 23. 23 or 24, right?
Yeah, Tyler Diamond's young. Katona's, I want to say he's 25, 26. Yeah. Like they're all really young guys, and this is what the UFC needs. You know, oftentimes in the Ultimate Fighter, we'll see, a veteran thrown in there. I don't mind that, but, I mean, I if you're looking towards the future, you want guys like this, and that's what the UFC wants, too. They want up-and-comers.
Yeah, what do you think of Smullen getting a shot in the finale?
I think it has everything to do with, again, the Jimmy's from. He's an SBG guy. And I personally, when I look at this fight on paper, I think this is to make Violent Bob Ross, Luis Pena, look good in this fight. From what I've seen on Smullen and what I've seen on Pena, I think Pena is the real deal. And I think he's a guy that the UFC is really going to catapult after this.
Pena's a monster for 155.
That's what I mean.
He's gigantic.
Yeah. And adding, we'll talk about this later when we break down the fight, but, training at AKA now, he was training at St. Cloud's before, which is Zach Freeman, sort of the most notable guy that trains there. Yeah, and mm-hmm. and now, he's training at AKA with guys like John Fitch and Adam Piccolotti, who's in Bellator. That's a recipe for success.
So Cormier kind of brought him in.
Yeah, and so he's been, because I interviewed Pena, check that interview out on Full Combat. if you want to see that, he talks about how he's been there. Basically, he's staying in a hotel right now, Aaron. He's been in California just training this entire time at AKA. I think that's going to pay dividends big time.
Yeah, for sure. I should mention, by the way, that James, I just introduced James as he's joining me on the show, but I should probably
We'd be here all day if we named
him. Yeah, that's the problem. It's like there are so many different websites that you're doing great work for, and the amount of interviews that you churn out, it's like an MMA interview factory.
It is, yes. It's a bit of a sausage factory. But quickly, Sports Illustrated MMA, Flow Combat, Fansided, Fightful, MMA Odds Breaker, and a few other ones. But those are sort of the main ones.
Some. That's how popular you are.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Terp House, My MMA News, and those are pretty much all of them.
Yeah,
that's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
It's like an Oscar speech. We'd be here all day.
Yeah, so. Exactly. But I should start playing you out. Yeah. Start playing music.
Exactly.
Earlier in the week, Bellator announces a deal with DAZN.
Yeah.
Now, this is one that really baffles me. Like, they made this into a big deal. They're putting that McDonald versus Musasi fight, a stacked card, exclusively on DAZN.
Yeah.
To me, I think this is a little bit too early for Bellator to do something like this. I feel like when you do something like this, you feel like your core audience is big enough that they're going to buy into a service that in Canada is $20 a month, in the U.S. is likely going to be around $15 U.S. a month, which is still about 20 Canadian. That you think that your brand is big enough that people are going to spend this kind of money to get your product. Because don't get me wrong, combat sports fans are pretty rabid, but in terms of the properties that DAZN has, other than maybe Eddie Hearn's boxing, there's not going to be a whole lot there that's going to satiate the appetite of somebody who loves Bellator that is going to get value added enough. I mean, if you look at what the UFC is doing with ESPN+, they're doing it so that if you subscribe to Fight Pass and ESPN Plus, it's the same price as subscribing to Fight Pass.
Right.
So if you're that big of an MMA fan, or you're just a general sports fan, and you have ESPN Plus, you get push alerts on your phone. It's like, oh, the UFC's on. Okay, I can watch that. I subscribe. $5. Okay, great. That's going to be a way bigger pool to draw from than DAZN.
I agree. I talked about this morning on The Parting Shot with Adam Martin, and we talked about, what are you really getting with this subscription? Are Bellator fans necessarily boxing fans? Not exactly. It's a tough battle a lot of these streaming services are faced with. The one devil's advocate you kind of play here, I mean, if this was a pay-per-view, would you pay the, $40 to watch
that?
Yeah,
and they're doing free trial as well.
Exactly. So that cuts the cost down a little bit. But I wish, and I don't know why they haven't done it, and I know they've been on different networks, why is there no library available to Bellator if you want to go watch past fights?
Yeah,
I think they should have figured that out and put an archive there. I know archiving is not a huge thing.
To follow up on that, Viacom is in the process of launching a big app, kind of like an archival app. Yeah. It'll probably be on there, from what I understand.
Right. Well, then that's what I'm saying, though. They should have combined something where you have that. Like, I'm all for paying for a streaming service if I get value out of it. So if you get archived fights, if you get live events, like let's say Bellator wanted to do a pay-per-view down the line, and you're a DAZN subscriber, and let's say you get $20 off or something, I'm fine with that. But it's so expensive to be a combat sports fan. ESPN Plus, like you mentioned, pay-per-views, Fight Pass, and then you've got all these other things like now this, and it's just, and you already pay for cable. Let's say it's expensive. So, and for a fight like this, I would say this matchup between Musasi and McDonald is absolutely a hardcore's like dream as far as a fight coming together. Casual fans really care? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
And the other part of it that really, I think, goes by the wayside is a Vanderlei versus Rampage fight would do big numbers on TV.
Yeah.
And now you're taking that out of the mix? Like, that's something you should headline a card, like a televised card with. That doesn't make any sense to me that you would put that on DAZN. And the big question for me with DAZN is, this is a long-term deal. Yeah. So what is the quality of fight on DAZN going to be like compared to the quality of fight on Paramount Network going forward? What are they
That's
doing?
True.
So what are we going to see in terms of the bigger cards? Because, you know, we've got the card on Friday with McFarlane and Lara.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some good stuff sprinkled in there. You've got Ed Ruth. You've got Syed Awad.
Yeah.
You've got Tyrell Fortune.
Valerie Letourneau on the card.
Valerie Letourneau's on the card. Like, these are decent names. And for a television crowd, like, you know, that's interesting to me. But if that's the kind of card that they're putting on DAZN and you're getting one of those a month, it's like $20. Like, no, I'll pass.
Yeah, no, I know. I think it's obviously digital subscription is the future. But to me, you got to bring value to the table. And I think you got to have more than just saying, hey, this is the one show we're doing. Like, how many shows are we going to get on there? I know that Bellator had to take it because of the money and everything, but because it's a great deal, who's going to turn down that? But it's a bit risky, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. And they said that in other markets that don't have DAZN, it'll be on television. But here in Canada, we do have DAZN. So that fight, again, will be
digital, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't subscribe to it, but I heard there was absolute nightmare problems
with the
NFL.
I heard that there were glitches, and it was just a very problematic proposition. And as a result of that, actually, they ended up having to sell the Red DAZN back to the television television providers at a cost. In order to make up for the losses that they, because it was just such a nightmare for customer support.
Yeah, no, it's a tricky situation.
Happens.
Yeah, I mean,
it's going to be perfected, and they've brought John Skinner on to run things
over at ESPN.
The U.S. side, who used to run ESPN. So that's John Skipper rather. Yeah. So that's interesting as well. And John Skipper is like a guru when it comes to television. So I think that DAZN certainly is trying to make a lot of moves to make their service something that they want people to subscribe to, but I just don't think it's enough at that price point. The price point is really key.
Yeah.
Because when you think about, this is what I always say when it comes to monthly subscriptions, you have to compete with Netflix.
Yeah, it's true.
Period.
Yeah.
I mean, for TSN, we have TSN Direct now. It's $25 a month. But the amount of content you're getting on that is like staggering. Like, we've got the FIFA World Cup. You know, we have rights to the NBA, NFL. That kind of thing is like, okay, well, there's big value there, but you know, when you look at it and you're like, well, now we've got to compete with Netflix, it's like, that's a tough proposition. That's a tough sell.
Yeah, I agree. I'm an NHL Center Ice subscriber, NHL app subscriber. And to me, it's perfect because you get the archive games. If I miss something, I can go back and watch it. Like, that type of value has to be there for me. If Bellator had archived stuff and I could go back and watch Eddie Alvarez and Michael Chandler one, I know they were on MTV2, I think, at the time or whatever.
Yeah.
But that would be nice, you know? And I know that a lot of people want live content, but I do like the archived aspect. And give me some live stuff. Maybe you put Bellator Kickboxing in there, too. I don't know.
It's also good if there's, like, a prospect that you want to go back and watch that was on an undercard of a Bellator
Exactly,
event.
For tape study
all
that.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's very true. So we'll see. But, I think it's... Right now, I'm cautiously looking at this and being like, I hope it works.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it is. I think it's a tough sell.
Yeah.
I really do. At the same time, though, they've got the money already, you know, they've gotten paid. But again, we don't know what the agreement is. We don't know what's on paper. We don't know what they're promising to deliver here.
Yeah, no, I agree. And just as a fan, like Rampage and Quinn Jackson, like, I don't, like, did either, if you look at Rampage Jackson's last fight against Sonnen, and you look at Silva's last fight against Sonnen as well, does that really make you want to see this fight again? I just don't care.
Put it on TV, though.
Like, yeah, no,
if it's
I agree.
I think a lot of the people that used to watch Pride and, you know, the throwback fans, because that, you know, they've had good numbers from like Hoist and Shamrock and those kind of throwback fights on TV. But putting it on DAZN, I think you're just like, that's a big missed opportunity.
I agree. Yeah, I completely agree with that.
So we'll see how that plays out. Like, personally, I'll watch if it's a free trial. I really want to see.
I'll be doing the same thing. Yeah.
Musasi, but they're not keeping me.
No, I agree.
Like, plain and simple, that card could be a 10 out of 10 card, and it's like, okay, well, I got what I was looking for.
Yeah, it's true. Those trials are key.
That said, if the fights that they're going to be putting on DAZN are pay per view caliber, like, they're going to really stack them, which I think would really do a disservice to that parent company, because they're trying to get ratings on the Paramount Network, which, again, the Paramount, those cards, when I watch them live, and it's the same four commercials at every break, like, it's too much for me.
Yeah.
I just feel like I get run down by the end.
I agree. They got to switch that up. They got to switch up the tape delayed stuff that's happening.
Like, the tape delay thing is a killer also.
Yeah, like, 2018.
It's impossible to avoid the spoilers.
Yeah, and it's... I mean, you can do it, but, like, you really would have to go to your way. Like, it's too much to ask of the combat sports fan.
Well, I think the problem was that same day there was something else going on that, like, you kind of wanted to follow on Twitter, like a live event, if I forgot. I forget what it was.
No, you're right,
It was, like, the NFL draft or something. Something along those lines where, like, you need to go and look at things and...
Are you just going to mute everyone that's in the MMA
world? One brand I've been very impressed with so far is the PFL. Yeah. I like that they have their cards free on Facebook. You can watch them. And I think the caliber of fights is higher than Bellator's in terms of the average fight.
Yeah,
like the competitiveness of the average fight and the name value of the average fighter, I think, is – and Ariel Helwani made fun of me when I said this coming out of the gate. And I think I might have just worded it poorly. But I said, like, in terms of the depth – like, in terms of if you look at the average fighter, I think that PFL's caliber is higher than Bellator's.
Yes, but I think that it's a mix. I mean, there's guys in Bellator that should be in the UFC. I don't know how many fighters in PFL you would say still belong in the UFC because a lot of them are UFC cast-offs, the ones that they have homegrown. I mean, I don't know if they'd make the UFC. It's tough to say. I mean, I know what you're saying, like, overall.
Yeah, like if you gave a numerical value to the fighters in both of these organizations, I think that the mean would be higher for the PFL.
I'll tell you this, though. I mean, how cool is Steven Seiler winning a few weeks ago when he was a huge underdog? Yeah. You know, a lot of these Russian guys, a lot of people are expecting them to win, and you have, you know, Steven Seiler going out there taking care of business. Stuff like that intrigues me. And I like the mix of UFC vets. Like, you know, Bojan Velikovic, for example, used to fight in the UFC. Like, I'm intrigued to see him fight in PFL because he's fought some tough guys in the UFC, including Darren Till.
He fought Darren Till.
Mm-hmm. How's he going to do in PFL? Will Brooks. I mean, that was intriguing to me because it's like, here's a guy who hadn't won a fight since Bellator.
The scoring format is a nightmare for Will Brooks, though.
Yeah.
Like, that you get the 7 points for the first round finish. Like, he has always been a decision guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and Andre Harrison has the same problem.
Yeah, Andre Harrison, he might be the best name they have on the roster, and he might not make it the second round. You just never know.
Yeah, it's true. So the format's intriguing, and, you know, just from a media standpoint, it's been good working with the fighters and everything, and I hope it succeeds because, you know, as we all know, the more outlets these fighters have, the better off they're going to be.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to speak with our guest for today. He's on UFC 226, Boston native, trains out there in Boston with Joe Lozon. And that would be Rob Font, who is coming off a very big win. And now he's going up against the highest level of opponent that he possibly can, a guy that a lot of people think might be the number one contender behind Cody Garbrandt, and that's Rafael Assuncao. And Rob Font joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
We're now joined by the Tiger Woods of the UFC, Rob Font. I hear you're a big golf guy. How's it going, Rob?
I'm doing good, man. You know, I'm trying to get my my handicap down, but I'm doing good.
That's good. I'm happy to hear that. You know, you're coming off a gigantic win, and now you're fighting really the biggest opponent of your career in Rafael Assuncao. This is basically a fast track to a title shot if you get a win here. Do you agree?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, I want to get in there. I feel like if I get a win, if I get a finish, I definitely want that. That title shot. But if I get a win. Squeak away a W, I don't know, maybe the next Mariah somebody, but if I get in there and I finish a guy that hasn't been finished in so long, I want that title shot.
Yeah, this is a weird question about Assuncao, because to me, I find that Assuncao has never been a very impressive fighter in terms of his fights when you're watching what he's doing, but it's so hard to beat him. Like, Moraes was unable to beat him. All these big names, like, he beat Dillashaw the first time they fought. What makes Assuncao so good? Like, it's kind of a dumb question, but what makes him so hard to beat?
No, you know, so he's a veteran. He has that on his side. He's real patient. He has no wasted movement. He's not going to just go out there and do anything just to do it. Everything's calculated. He's real smart. He's a veteran. So he has like little savvy tricks, like knowing what time to shoot a takedown or when to throw a kick or when not to throw a kick. And one of my boxing coaches told me, sometimes the best punch is the one you don't throw. And I believe he really understands that.
But given us that Assuncao isn't much of a finisher, is that something that you think will play to your advantage? I know in your last fight against Almeida, Almeida's a guy that finishes guys. But I know that Assuncao's coming off of a finish. But before that, it had been years. I think it was something along the lines. It's like 6 years since his previous finish before that. When going into a fight, does that allow you to be aggressive?
Yeah. So with that being said, like, he doesn't open up as much. So there might not be as many openings as I would hope and like. But with that being said, if he leaves an inch open for me, I gotta make sure I jump on him smart and put this guy away. But like I said, also I gotta be comfortable with just jabbing him for 15 minutes and just keeping the pressure on him and winning a decision if I have to. But obviously, you know me, I want to get that finish. I want that bonus. I want to put the pressure on the rest of the cards. To perform. So I'm definitely looking for that finish.
And Rob, you've known about this fight for a while. We saw you at UFC 223 cornering Calvin Kattar. How much has it helped just having a full training camp for this fight, especially a guy who is tricky to beat, like Aaron said, and Rafael Assuncao?
Yeah, you know, 11 weeks camp, you know, be healthy. The weight's far ahead of schedule. I had my last sparring session yesterday. I felt great. Got my last conditioning session in today, you know, with the heels and all that. So, you know, I feel great. I'm healthy. I'm actually helping my boy Cooley right now. He's playing for Combat Zone in New Hampshire for Calvin Cater's show, and he's cutting weight right now. So, you know, I'm staying busy. I'm keeping my mind off the fight and just having a blast. But, you know, having that long, you know, 11-week camp has been huge. I get to work on little tricks here and there and really put together a game plan. And I think Tyson really figured out his own style for sure.
Who's a friendlier promoter, Dana White or Calvin Cater?
Dana White or Calvin Cater. I got to go with Calvin Cater, man. He's a man.
Speaking of Calvin, he had that video last week that went viral with the bird. Literally, when we were doing an interview last week, Calvin's got this bird sitting on his head. I saw Barstool pick up the story. How cool is that to see Calvin just get all this publicity over something pretty random?
It's huge, man. You should have seen this guy's DM, man. It was ridiculous. No, it was awesome, man. You know, he's in there. He's getting some love from that. I'm getting some love for that. My following went up because of the Robin. So, it's been huge. It's been fun with it. It just sucks that the bird flew away. He was hoping to keep it as a mascot or something like that, but he definitely flew away.
Maybe he should go to, like, a bird sanctuary and get a bird, like a pet bird that would be, like, a mascot for him. Maybe he could be like Coco Beware. He could have it on his shoulder and bring it out to the cage with him.
That's what I'm thinking, man. That's what I'm thinking.
Hey, Rob, one of your good friends, Greg Rebello, just retired this past week. I know things didn't go his way on the Contender Series. Have you talked to Greg at all since he made that decision?
Yeah, actually, I just got off the he just Snapchatted me a couple of funny pictures earlier today before I got him this interview. But you know, he's good. You know, he just got caught. He's backing up straight up in the cage. And, you know, he's all good spirits. Greg's going to be an amazing coach. He's going to be an amazing promoter. You know, he's going to be amazing commentating. Anything he does in the sport, I know he still has a spot in this sport. It's not fighting, but he'll be fine.
Are you glad this fight's taking place in Vegas and not in Brazil?
Yes, man. So it's funny, actually, that's what me and Greg were joking around. Like, he struggles in Vegas, I struggle in Brazil, but, you know, it is what it is. I'm going to go out there and do my thing in Vegas. So, like I said, I have a great track record in Vegas, and I plan on keeping it clean.
I'm guessing, you know, fights offered to you in Brazil in the future are probably not going to be very high on your to-do list?
Not at all, man. I'm going to turn all of them down.
There is a bit of a logjam at bantamweight right now. You know, we've seen, Marlon Moraes obviously getting that win over Jimmy Rivera, and, you have this big fight here as well. Do you feel like you have to do anything extra, whether it's, you know, post-fight speech or anything like that, just to really, be in the mind of Dana White when they're booking the next title challenger to the rematch between Cody and TJ?
I might have to pop off some flick, do my Colby Covington impression, but you never know. I feel like, obviously, I'm the type of guy I'm more of a silent assassin. You know, I want to go in there and let my work, you know, speak for itself. But if I got to play the game, I'll play the game. And, you know, you might catch me outside the cage when Cody and TJ fight. So you never know. But, that's not really my style. But if I have to, to get it done, I got to get it done, you know.
I've seen a lot of fighters backstage after events, and I don't think I've ever seen one as happy as you were after UFC 220. You and your team were just, you guys were on cloud nine, really. Is that the kind of enthusiasm that you carry with you throughout events and, you know, before, during, and after?
Yeah, you know, Boston was amazing. You know, we had the hometown love. We had my boy Kyle up there doing his thing. We had Lozon, you know, the OG, the veteran, in the back with us. We had Rapello back there, and obviously Calvin did his thing. So the energy was great. You know, Cooley Man was out there, you know, stunting on everybody. It was a great time, and I feel like, you know, we're going to kind of mimic that coming Vegas. Obviously, none of these guys will be fighting, but they'll be out there with me.
You know, you trained with Joe, and we were talking about Greg Rebello retiring this week. Rashad Evans, Johnny Hendricks also retired. How in it is Joe Lozon still? Do you think Joe Lozon still has a while to go before he starts considering retirement?
I think he has another one. We actually sit down and really talked about it, and he's going to change up a couple of things and really get to it. But I personally believe he has one more at least in him, and if that doesn't go as well as planned, then I feel like I don't want to say it, but it might have to be done, you know.
Well, that fight against Grootsemacher's statistics. I don't know. Like, usually I don't pay that much attention to statistics, but he had an incredible amount of output at a very high percentage. He just looked like a different fighter, and I don't know, regardless of how hard Joe might have trained for Chris Grootsemacher, I don't think he was expecting that Chris Grootsemacher, and I don't think anybody was, really.
Yeah, he had a lot of output. Kid, that guy never really got tired. He hit Joe with a lot. It was real tough to watch, but, shout out to him. He did his thing, but I think Joe has another one in him.
Are you hoping the UFC comes to Boston more often? I love the city. I think that it's a fantastic place to watch fights. It's a great atmosphere. People in Boston, when it comes to sports, are pretty hungry. Do you think that it should be almost like an annual event that they do there?
Yeah, I think they should come every January, man. Every January, have me, Calvin, Kyle on there, and just, you know, I think we'll tell that place apart. But, yeah, like you said, you know, Boston really gets behind the sports teams, their fighters, and, you know, it's a great crowd. It's a diverse crowd. You know, you have a lot of different people from a lot of different countries and states coming together. But then you have your locals. So it's a great time, and I would love to fight in Boston again.
The card you're on, Rob, is stacked, I mean, top to bottom, as they usually do on International Fight Week. Do you like the fact that this fight's kind of flying under the radar a little bit with some of the other big fights?
A little bit. You know, we don't – obviously, we're not going to have to be doing too much, like, PR or anything like that, so that'd be cool. I'll get to have more time to go play golf with you and, you know, get out there to Top Golf and all that.
Exactly.
But, you know, like, yeah, I want to get used to it now because obviously I plan on being that guy that's going to have to be busy all fight week and all that. So I'm going to take advantage of, you know, kind of flying on the radar, letting, you know, the main car kind of take the spotlight. But like I said, I plan on coming still in the show.
Well, in terms of PR, I know two people that are going to want to speak to you in Las Vegas next week, and that's James and I. We look forward to seeing you fight at UFC 226, the biggest fight of your career. And it sounds like you're excited for it.
Yes, sir, man. I can't wait. I'm smiling. This whole interview, I've been cheating the whole time, man.
Well, so have we, for what it's worth. And we appreciate your time. We look forward to seeing you next week.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
That was Rob Font. Man, what an energetic guy. He's just, like I said, after UFC 220, he was and his team were just over the moon. They were having such a great time back there. And rightfully so. It's his hometown, and he got a big win.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest win of his career, and that's why he's getting this fight against Rafael Sunsau. You know, Thomas Almeida was thought to be the future of the bantamweight division, and Rob Font went out there and had a, you know, probably the best performance of his career, and second straight International Fight Week for Rob Font. Hopefully this time, you know, continues, you know, that streak that he's got going on.
What would International Fight Week be without somebody pulling out of a fight? So we just got word that Mike Perry is opponentless for now for UFC 226. They are seeking a replacement as Yancy Medeiros has pulled out of the fight. You know, you and I were discussing a couple things. Paul Felder was one name because he just lost his opponent, although he'd be fighting up a weight class in that situation. That would be one heck of a fight. I hope that that's what ends up playing out. And we also mentioned Curtis Millender and Max Griffin are on the card. Griffin just beat Mike Perry, so Millender could be a fit in terms of a replacement. But if you're looking to have a fight where Mike Perry's going to succeed, Millender might not be the guy.
No, and you want to build up Millender. You know, he had a great debut against Thiago Alves and a guy that I think they could really build in that division. So I don't know if that's Mike Perry's necessarily the fight there, but who's available? I mean, at this point, I mean, we can, I guess by the time...
Well, there's a lot of guys in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
You might be able to get a short notice guy. Who? I mean, you know who trains everywhere. So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay,
who trains at Extreme Couture?
Well, that's the thing. A lot of the guys are like lower weight classes. So I'm just trying to think like as far as, you know, welterweight specifically. I mean, let's see. I mean, the two main gyms, obviously Syndicate and Extreme. Nothing's coming to mind. I got to be honest, because when you think of those two gyms, you know, Extreme, it's a lot of lightweights and featherweights, and then you know the bigger guys like the middleweights, like you know, you've got you know, Tavares, Uriah Hall, guys like that. You don't really think of a lot of welterweights. I mean, Ryan Couture is there, but he's fighting on Friday, you know, against
and he's not Awad. Really UFC caliber.
And he's, I don't think he's allowed to go fight there. But yeah, I mean, no one really sort of stands out to me as far as either of those gyms, as far as a welterweight matchup. So
the Medif gets. You've also got the MMA Lab you can draw from. Like, these are kind of places that are close. You got places in California.
Or is there someone on Contender Series that won recently that maybe didn't get a contract? I was going to say Austin Springer, but I think he's a lightweight.
What about the guy with diabetes who won this week?
Oh, Jordan Williams. He's a middleweight, though.
Middleweight, yeah. So that's going to be tough also. But he walks around at middleweight. Like, he walks, but I know that weight cutting for his diabetes is not something that he can do.
No. So I don't think that'll happen. But I was just trying to think if there's a welterweight that maybe won that didn't get a contract, that might be an option too. But either way, I imagine they're going to find someone for Mike Perry.
That guy's an upcoming Contender Series, though, like fights in the coming weeks. So
that's
true. There's probably a lot of people to draw from, but you also want to have a good fight for. This is a main card fight, if I recall.
I believe so. Yeah. So they might have to shuffle the deck a little bit as far as that goes. But it'll be interesting.
You know what? I think that's the main event of the prelims.
Okay.
So they have some wiggle room there. So that would be good.
But if you're looking at like you said, the only matchup that they could pull from on this card would be the Griffin and Millender, and it's really just Millender.
Unless Gilbert Burns wants to fight up. I know he's had trouble cutting weight at 155. So
that's true.
That could be a possible opponent, but. I think Burns wants to stay at 155.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem that keen to fight at 170.
No.
Not to mention that Mike Perry is not exactly a guy you want to step in on short notice to fight necessarily.
No, no, I wouldn't think so.
Mike Perry's a tough proposition right now because you know he's going to be a tough fight and he's not ranked. Yeah. So it's not exactly a guy that you'd be eager to fight because it's not going to put you in like title contention or anything. You can still make a name off the guy, but the last two guys already have.
Yeah, you right? need. I think you need to pull someone from either Contender Series or someone that's, you know, doesn't have a fight right now. Someone that's going to have to step in on short notice because these are the type of moments that the UFC likes where they want someone who's going to step up.
Absolutely. We'll see how that... but you've also got guys on the Friday, but I don't think there's anybody at 170 on the Friday either.
Doesn't look like it.
Mearshart's a lightweight. Yeah, probably not.
No.
That's tough. No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the top 27 finale, so let's start with that. I mean, yeah. Is there anything that sticks out to you looking at the odds of the current fights? I know we don't know who Brad Katona is fighting as of this recording. Again, I think you know, most people would say it's probably going to be Tyler Diamond. And I think we're going to see a lot of guys from the show matched up as well. But yeah. They probably can't give that away as of yet because you don't know what's going to happen in that other fight.
Well, if we're looking at odds, I am surprised a little bit to see Israel Adesanya the favorite against Brad Tavares. You know, Brad Tavares, probably the most underrated middleweight in the division. He's coming off that knockout win over Christoph Yatko and a guy who has, you know, I remember last year fighting Elias. I believe he was an underdog heading into that fight, and he beat Elias. So to see him this big of an underdog, I know Adesanya has fights in kickboxing in Glory. He obviously has a lot of fights there. But I just look at the experience here, Aaron, and the fact that Tavares is an underdog, a little bit weird in my opinion, but I know that people are big on Adesanya and think he's the real deal.
I'm with you. And again, it's based on public action. There was a time where Adesanya was like minus 240 or minus 220 right around the time it opened up. And that's when you probably could have done really well going with Tavares. But that's the one that really stands out to me as well is something that is a little bit of a tough pill to swallow. And Martin Bravo as an underdog it's interesting. It's close to an even money fight. So
yeah, I know Adam Martin likes Bravo in that fight against Caceres. But again, I go with experience here. You know, Caceres has a lot more fights than Bravo. He's fought really tough guys. You look at his losing streak. I mean, a lot of those guys are top guys. I mean, he went to a split decision with Yair Rodriguez. I mean, that you know, he didn't win the fight, but it was a very close fight. So I think Caceres is rightfully the favorite in this fight.
Yeah, and then you also look at Pechota and Mearshart, and that's an interesting one too because we haven't seen a ton from Pechota yet. But he's looked really good in his fights.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people who were high on Pechota when we did our preview today on Parting Shot. You know, I had a lot of people saying, well, you're crazy for picking Gerald Mearshart. But the reality is I just think, you know, Mearshart has fought really tough guys. The one fight he didn't look good was Thiago Santos, who's looked good in his own right. I mean,
guy to look good against, except for, I guess, in his last
fight.
But
Pechota, we don't know enough as far as I'm concerned because, you know, the win over Tim Williams, I don't think Tim Williams personally is UFC caliber, and I don't think that tells us too much. The win before that was Jonathan Wilson, so he'll have his hands full against Gerald Mearshart, who's not only good on the ground but has knockout power too.
Speaking of Santos's last fight against David Branch, yeah. I proposed yesterday that David Branch step in and fight Gustafson and try to get a fast track to a title shot. I meant to ask you, what do you think of that idea?
I like that idea a lot. I think that OSP is probably going to get that fight, though.
No, apparently OSP doesn't want it, like can't take it. Something came out yesterday saying OSP had some sort of ongoing family situation that he needs to deal with.
I mean,
and
if David Branch wants to...
That's why Branch's name came to mind, because really there's not a whole lot of options. I mean, Latifi's not going to fight him because they're teammates.
Yeah.
Gustafson's beaten a lot of these guys already. Misha Cirkunov could be a good option, but they keep making him fight up and he keeps losing. So David Branch might be the guy. I mean, he's the former champion at light heavyweight in World Series of Fighting. He's fought in that weight class before. He's 36. If he wants to get a shot at a title, this is express train to title town here. Alexander Gustafson.
It's true. Maybe, but wasn't there something that came out that said he didn't want to fight a light heavyweight anymore?
But again, 36.
But, you know, money talks, opportunity
won't
talks.
Need to cut weight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I like it. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting at, Aaron, is I do like the pick.
All right, well, thank you. I appreciate that. If Mick Maynard and Sean Shelby want to give me credit once that fight's made, I have a feeling that fight's going to get made for some reason.
Okay.
It just makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
I mean, okay, well, you heard it here first on the TSN MMA show.
I have hunches about these things. It's like when Gokhan Saki won his debut, and I said a great opponent for him in his next fight would be Khalil Roundtree, and here we are. UFC 226, he'll be fighting Khalil Roundtree. He's a small favorite in the fight. Anything from 226 stand out to you as a bit of a confusing line?
Just looking at it here, I think that most of these lines are good, but here's one thing about Khalil Roundtree, which I found out in my interview with him. He's left Vegas. He is no longer training at Syndicate anymore.
Okay.
He is training in California now. When I asked him what gyms he's training at, he says, you know, Black House and a few others, just kind of getting training. But it sounds to me like he doesn't have a real structured training camp. So that's a bit of a red flag heading into this fight for me, because Syndicate, he had those bigger bodies there, you know, your Andrew Sanchez's and guys like that. But who's he really training with in California? It's tough to say. Now, I think Khalil also, I mean, it sounds to me like he really took that last loss really hard because he, like I said, he switched camps. He's off social media. He's on like a blackout now. If you look at his Twitter and Instagram, he hasn't posted anything. So he's going into this fight really focused. But Saki's coming off an injury. And, you know, you never know with you know, a guy who's getting a bit older in Saki. It's an interesting fight. I really think it is a coin flip. And I think the line's right where it needs to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing with Roundtree, though, is that his bread and butter is on feet. Mm-hmm. And if you're going on the feet with Saki, there's a good chance you're going to get hit with something. So
that's true. That's
if Roundtree can't implement a well-rounded game, I like Saki in that fight as a result. But
that said,
Roundtree hits hard, man, and these are different size gloves, and Roundtree can put anybody out.
It's true. One line you did mention, just talking about lines that are a bit inflated, Jamie Moyle, minus 300 over Emily Whitmire. That's really confusing. Now, Whitmire, it's been pretty much documented on The Ultimate Fighter that, you know, she's had some mental issues. The talent is there. She just sort of, for whatever reason, can't put it together in the cage in certain fights. We saw that in her second fight on Tough, and then we saw that at the finale. Granted, she fought a really tough opponent in the finale, but I think this line should be a little bit closer, and, you know, Whitmire seems to be in a good spot now, you know, training at... She's at Extreme Couture training with some really good fighters there, and should be interesting. Now, Moyle's at Team Alpha Male now, so that's interesting.
No,
too.
I didn't know that. That's a good matchup. I like that a lot. And I like you said, I think that line should be a lot closer. And Stipe and Cormier, I think that one's it's a little bit of a big gap for my liking because, you know, people say, you know, Cormier's been knocked out by Jones, and, you know, he's going to have to fight up at heavyweight again. But if you watch some of, like, he's been hit with an H-bomb before. He's been hit with head kicks and, you know, to the forehead by Anthony Johnson. Like, he's been hit with a lot, and I'm not convinced that his chin is that much worse than it's been in the past, because I don't think there's enough evidence to prove that. The shot that Jones hit him with, anybody would be probably taken out with that shot. Miocic hits a lot harder. Miocic is a very good wrestler. Cormier was an Olympic wrestler, so...
That's the biggest thing. This kind of reminds me a bit of the Curtis Blaydes and Alistair Overeem fight, in the sense that if Cormier gets that takedown at any point in the fight, whether it's early or a little bit later, that confidence level is going through the roof. And can Stipe stuff a takedown like that? It's going to be interesting. I still think Stipe is the best heavyweight we've seen. I think the resume he has, he's probably one of the most underrated guys as far as a pound-for-pound list goes. And, you know, you just look at the fact that he's just so mobile as a heavyweight. Like, DC's going to have trouble with that. And you've got a, you know, guy who's a little bit bigger. So, we'll see what happens there. But
that's a great fight.
How often do we see, I mean, other than Conor McGregor, how often do we see a fighter, you know, move up a weight class who's still a current champion? It's going to be awesome. This, to me, is the fight of the weekend.
And the Holloway-Ortega fight is interesting, too, because I feel like Holloway would normally be a bigger favorite than this, but Ortega, like, when you saw that Edgar was, like, the favorite over him, you thought, Edgar's probably going to be able to just outpoint him. And then, like, Ortega just grabs stuff out of nowhere.
Yeah, he really does.
It's like fighting a mousetrap. Like, He's a dangerous guy at all times in a fight.
And these are two guys arguably in their prime right now. I mean, Ortega, you could say maybe is a few more
Ortega's
years.
Ortega's older than Holloway.
Yeah. So, and Holloway, I mean, we're gonna find out really how good those wins were over Jose Aldo, because, you know, this is a real good test, you know, taking on a guy in Brian Ortega, who I've literally seen people, you know, flip on this fight as far as a pick. And, I mean, what can you say? I think experience-wise, you have to go with Holloway just with the guys he's fought and, you know, as far as the experience that he's had, because... If you look at Brian Ortega, one thing that does concern me, and it didn't happen in the Edgar fight, but it's happened in past fights, he is losing his fights, and then he is able to come back. You're not going to be able to get away with that against Max Holloway.
And the Chiesa Pettis fight, I think, is very good. I think Chiesa might, you know, probably should be a bigger favorite based on the sample size of Pettis we've seen as of late. Ngannou versus Derek Lewis, you just never know. I mean, I think Ngannou will probably catch Lewis with something at some point, but if Lewis implements a wrestling-heavy game, we've seen how Ngannou can be defeated. Who knows?
Derek Lewis is a +305 underdog. Yeah. Is very intriguing in my opinion, because you know, Ngannou, while he does have that knockout power, Lewis has got some, you know, fantastic experience. He's got knockout power himself. It'll be interesting here. Ngannou spent his entire camp in Vegas at Syndicate, so that's interesting, working with John Wood. We'll see if that has paid dividends. And you mentioned Michael Chiesa before. He's also done his entire camp at Syndicate
Vegas,
as well.
Yeah.
He's pretty much, you told me when I interviewed him, he said that the majority, he's been in Vegas more this last year than he has been in Spokane, so that's kind of interesting.
And Costa and Hall, I think, is a pretty big line, too, to pay
for
the eraser.
Yeah, you know,
Uriah,
I see,
when he fights guys that he's supposed to lose to, sometimes he ends up winning.
Has a win over Gegard Mousasi, no questions asked. I mean, I know he lost the rematch, but he's got some good wins. You're exactly right here. I mean, Costa, what people are saying, he's the future, but Hall, man, he could surprise at +355. Yeah. You know, you throw a knockout prop in there.
All
or
it takes is like, it's like just one counter from Hall, and you're done.
Yeah,
he hits hard. If you remember those Ultimate Fighter episodes, like People thought he was going to be a future champion. They were terrified of him. And like you mentioned with Whitmire, it tends to be mental with Hall.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And we've seen fights. I think the way Hall can win this fight is if he's the aggressor. You know, when he fought Whitaker, he was looking good, but he couldn't match his pace. Whitaker was getting in his face. I find when Hall fights guys that are really sort of setting the pace, he tends to crumble a bit. And if Costa is able to do that, I think we could see another win here for
and
Costa.
And really, who's Costa beaten? Like, his best one is Johnny Hendricks. Like, I completely washed Johnny Hendricks,
exactly,
who just fought his last fight.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we drawing from here?
This is great matchmaking right here, because Hall has been underwhelming. I think that's the best way you could put it. And Costa, is he the real deal? Well, if you beat Uriah Hall, we'll at least understand that you can beat a guy who's...
hang with ranked guys.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So
that's an interesting one.
This card's so stacked.
I know. The 226 card is really phenomenal. The Griffin-Millender fight, I think, is great. We saw what Griffin was capable of.
And some bad blood, Aaron. I don't know if you're aware of this. So these guys, on the regional scene, these guys are both from California. So I know that, Millender has said that he's wanted to fight Griffin. And then I think it was Millender who said he wanted to fight Griffin, and Griffin didn't know who he was. And there's been this sort of back and forth. And, Millender was in Bellator. People, if they can't remember that, didn't have a very good time there. But ever since Bellator, he's been on fire. He hasn't lost. And there's a bit of personal beef going into this one, because I talked to both guys, and that should make for an interesting fight. But really, I mean, Griffin, everyone counted him out in the Perry fight. He surprised a lot of people. And Millender, is his debut, was it just that he fought a Thiago Alves is sort of over the hill, or is he really the real deal? We'll find out.
And Millender's got some physical gifts that are very tough. I mean, his reach is crazy, the kicks. Like, he's just got a lot going for him. And Dan Hooker, another guy coming off a big win against Gilbert Burns, who also is coming off a pretty solid win, albeit against a much lower level of competition. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a fun one, and Klose and Venata are two guys that I think have very bright futures in this sport.
I'm a little surprised Gilbert Burns is the underdog here. I know Hooker's coming off the big win over Jim Miller, but Burns, I mean, here's a guy, I think he's had one loss in the UFC, maybe one or two, but he's looked good in all of his fights. And the thing with Burns is, as he showed in his last fight, he's got knockout power, and his ground game's on another level, right? So, if this fight does get to the canvas, I think he looks great. Dan Hooker, though, always a gamer as well, too. So that's a good fight, but, man, Burns at underdog money, that's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Klose and Venata, though, this two guys who lost to David Tamer, we'll see sort of how this one plays out. But Klose has the wrestling, Venata, obviously the striking. Two good camps, too, MMA Lab versus Jackson Wink.
Yeah, absolutely. That's that's card from top to bottom. I mean, Whitmire and Moyle is really the only fight that stands out to me as like, okay, I don't know what this is doing here. It's one of these things is not like the other type fight.
Maybe they're keeping with the theme of Ultimate Fighter. They're both two Ultimate Fighter alum. I'm not sure there. Well,
why
maybe
not
they
just
need
put that on the
fight.
Finale card, because you've got Honchak and Modafferi, you've got De La Rosa and Ostevich already on that.
People would say they're sexist, Aaron, then they wouldn't have a women's fight on there.
Yeah, well, maybe you just put a better women's fight on there.
Exactly.
What's that, Andrade versus, what was the one?
Carolina.
Versus Carolina. Why?
Yeah, what the heck's
that's
up with that?
That's a great fight.
It is, but what's happening with the title? I thought Andrade would get the next title.
Well, apparently Rose this week was saying that she's nursing an injury and just wants to take it easy. She's not in a hurry to fight again.
Yeah.
So let's see how that one plays out. But Carolina has a win over Rose.
Yeah,
and Andrade, I think, would be favored over Rose. Do you agree?
I agree. Yeah,
actually, I think there's a line out for that fight already. I'm gonna look that up. I believe that there's
future odds. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember what that was?
I don't know if I saw it. Best fight odds would probably.
Yeah,
be
that's where I'm looking it up. But personally, I think Andrade has just been a buzzsaw, and since that Joanna loss, she's just been like seems like a fighter possessed.
Yeah.
And the line for that fight is Rose minus 130. So
Rose is
a small favorite.
Okay.
Over Andrade.
That's interesting.
I think it actually opened as Andrade. So apparently, also, Paul Felder is open to fighting Mike Perry as per Ariel Helwani. So that could... and apparently, Felder's weighing in the low 180s right now. His management's reached out to the UFC to pitch the idea. So the big question there is, will the fans in Boise, Idaho be upset if they lose Felder from that card?
I'm sure they will be, but this is International Fight Week.
It sure is.
They got to step up to the plate.
Let's hope it's not like the previous International Fight Week where just big fights fall out.
Yeah.
I'm really fingers crossed that this one comes
just
through.
Just don't see any black cats. Don't go under any ladders or anything like that.
But
let me ask you,
this,
though, quickly. Felder, if he does fight Mike Perry and let's say he wins, what does that really do for him, though? I mean, I know he's had trouble getting the ranks as far as that lightweight, but what does this do for him? If the UFC wants him to fight, they got to pay him pretty well. Otherwise,
yeah, they're probably going to have to pay him. And I think it elevates his profile a little bit, like a win over Mike Perry. I mean, he's already gotten ranked, pity ranked, as a result of losing that fight, not getting the fight against Khabib.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that would be a great fight. That would just be an entertaining
And you
good
and I
scrap.
Both know that Felder cuts a lot of weight. So maybe this would lead to him.
Yeah.
Maybe he would want to stay at welterweight. Who knows? So yeah. There's a lot of options there.
That's absolutely a fun one. I hope that does come into fruition. That would be good to see. I'm guessing Felder's not calling that event, so, you know.
No, exactly. He doesn't have to run from the commentating booth.
Yeah, I also think that one of the things that people aren't really discussing with him losing that fight against Vic is he probably lost out on the opportunity to call Contender Series, which is what really got him his jump start for his color commentary career in the UFC. And he was kind of a staple in that brand, and I think that he probably took a step away from that because he was training for a fight.
Yeah, no, I'd believe that because he's at Rufus Sport training now because I talked to some of his teammates, and it's... You know, if you got a fight coming up, you can't be flying back and forth to Vegas. It's just too difficult.
And I know you've told me how much you missed the Snoopcast, so hopefully they bring that back.
I don't think I ever listened to one Snoopcast, to be honest.
I did. I liked it. It was funny.
It's good.
But I did agree with the fighter saying that Snoop is kind of treating them like they're commodities rather than people.
Yeah, that's the problem with it. I mean, this has been a great season of Contender Series. I kind of wish they do it year-round. I think it's just...
That's great.
It's overall, the fights have been good. You know, I like the fact that it's a shorter card, so, you know, it's not cutting too much. And can you imagine if it was like a 7-8 fight card, like on a Tuesday night? That would be too much.
No, I'd be fine with it. I love watching the sport.
But, yeah, no, I agree. I just, you know, I like, you know, the little cards. It's good.
Yeah, I like how fast it goes. And the format of it is really a home run. Like, whoever came up with the ideas, they've honestly come up with a perfect idea for this sport.
Yeah.
It's like the suspense at the end to see who's going to get the contract, trying to figure out who it's going to be. I believe it's five fights, and they just kind of, like, roll through them. It's usually under 2 hours in length. It's just perfect. It's a great way to spend a Tuesday night, and I applaud whoever came up with that format.
And I like how they bring back, you know, old vets too. Like we saw Julian Arosa, for example, when you know, and it's a good story because sometimes it's just bad circumstances. Guys get to the UFC, they just have a bad draw, and you know it's tough to overcome that.
I sent a tweet out saying, you know, welcome back to UFC Julian Arosa after he got that win. And I saw that I got liked today by Debbie Arosa, who I imagine is his mom. So
yeah,
shout out
go.
To Mrs. Arosa. I appreciate
that's
the
awesome.
Like.
Aaron reaching all types of audiences.
Yes, exactly. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. James, thanks for joining me. Once again, where can people find your great work?
Easiest way is on Twitter, at Lynch on Sports. I'm obviously promoting all that. My YouTube channel, youtube.com/LynchOnSports. I put all my interviews in there in playlists so you can find them very, very well here. And Aaron, this was awesome. Love to do it again. It was good talking some fights and talking to Rob Font. That was awesome.
I've got to get the most out of you while you're still in Toronto.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's right. I'll be moving to the West Coast later this year. But you know, when I'm back, you know, I'll be obviously seeing you guys as much as I can.
You want to come to our Vancouver affiliate and go sit inside the studio?
Go,
we can
exactly.
do it by ISDN. We can do that too.
That's good. I'll take Dave Pratt's old seat.
Exactly. Or Bro Jake. I don't know.
Bro Jake. Yeah, I did hear he's leaving. Yeah, that's a big deal in Vancouver. I actually had some people texting me about that.
Yeah, I read somewhere that he's taking a new role with TSN 1040, but I'm not sure exactly what it is.
Oh, I thought he was retiring.
All right, well, again, thanks everybody for tuning in. TSN.ca/UFC. This week I'll have tons of interviews, tons of content. I always appreciate people who check it out. You'll be seeing a lot of short videos from me on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, at Aaron Bronstetter, but chances are if you're listening to this, you already do, and I do appreciate that. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back next week I don't know about... next week, because next week is fight week, so this is kind of your appetite satiator for fight week. But if I do get a lot of good interviews down there, I could turn that into a podcast and put that up as well. So thanks for tuning in, and we appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.